In our first episode of season three of Tim Talk.
So to be able to destigmatize use and dismantle bias is radical.
A frank conversation about the conscious and unconscious stigma people in recovery face when seeking medical care.
Welcome one and all to our first episode of Tim Talk, season three. I hope you all had a restful and relaxing summer and enjoyed the beauty of our great state of Maine. As always in this podcast, we shine our spotlight on issues of social and medical justice. Now, let me recap what we hope will be a takeaway from these recordings. We want our listeners to feel the different perspectives and ideas that make up the things we talk about. We on this side of the microphone will be leaning in heavily with our hearts. We are inclusive, circular in our search to learn from one another. We seek to elevate compassion, seeing people as a whole, and our organization, Northern Light Health, as one. My hope is that we are displaying a safe space to ask questions and open minds. And in so doing, safe spaces are opened everywhere, among our colleagues and those we care for. Today on this podcast, we want to hit the ground running. And so we are starting with a weighty and important topic. As September is National Recovery Month, we are focusing our attention on substance use disorder and the stigma experienced by people in recovery. In talking before this recording with my two guests that I'll introduce in a second, they pointed out that, to different degrees, we all are navigating waters of the interface between external stimuli, my term, not my colleagues' terms. But I thought it was a real interesting point. Be those stimuli substance, food, relationships with other people, you name it. And all of those external interfaces have certain stigmas and vulnerabilities associated with them that presents itself in different ways to different people. We honor today those who allow themselves to be vulnerable enough to talk to others and seek help, be it with a friend or a service that we provide. None of us are in this alone. And before I introduce our guests, I'd like to share with you some glaring statistics that highlight the scope of the problem of substance use. So far this year in Maine, there have been more than 4,900 drug overdoses, and 329 of those were fatal, an increase of nearly 7% from a year ago. The pandemic disguised some modest gains from the prior year, but now we must raise awareness and look into this more deeply. To that end, I want to introduce our guests. Both are Northern Light Health colleagues who approach this issue from different experience. Kara Alexic is a Northern Light employee in long-term recovery from substance use disorder who has firsthand experience with the power of choice and change. As a teenager, Kara was diagnosed with an eating disorder that broadened into polysubstance dependence as a young adult. Her recovery journey began in 2005, and since that time, she has been an advocate for reducing stigma and increasing access to SUD treatment pathways. Her story has been shared in radio and press, privately and with policymakers. Kara joined the Northern Light Patient Access Team in 2020. Kara, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tim.
Our second guest is Jacqueline Sear, a family nurse practitioner at Northern Light Acadia Hospital in the Adult Ambulatory Clinic and Addiction Care. Her duties include serving as the primary substance use provider at Acadia, where she is also director of substance use services. Jacqueline is currently working with leadership teams to stand up a comprehensive service to address over time all substances of abuse to better serve our communities. What a noble, noble cause. Jackie, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you, Tim. I'm glad to be here.
Wonderful. So to begin our discussion today, I'll start carb with you. I'd like to thank you for your courage in sharing your story. For the benefit of our audience, would you please share your personal story and why this is so important to you? And was there a turning point for you? Was there a moment or series of moments in your life that you felt marked a shift toward recovery? Go with that where you wish, Cara.
Absolutely. First off, I just want to acknowledge how powerful it is that we are sitting here having this conversation and all of the listeners who are taking the time to be part of this as well. Yes. It's huge. It's generally thought that 1 out of 10 Americans, struggle with substance use disorder, and that's an astounding number. That's mothers and cousins and best friends and employees and community members. And when that figure was mentioned about the amount of folks who have lost their lives to accidental overdoses, it brought me back to one of my friends who passed away this year. And that person was, a poet and a person with very strong family ties and, had an amazing sense of humor and fashion. And, they were so much more than the disease that took their life. And so for me, that also holds true. I had some high risk factors. I do have a genetic predisposition. All sides of my family, we have history of substance use disorder and eating disorder. And I also experienced childhood trauma. And during my formative years, my parents were going through a lot of conflict. And by 5, I was switching off with each household. That's the way the custody deal worked for our family. And I can have so much grace and love and compassion and see that my family was doing absolutely the best they could do. And also, it created a schism for me around, belonging. Where do I belong? How do I fit in? My family got very big. All of a sudden, I became, one of 8 siblings, and we had this humongous family tree, which, again, so abundant with, love. And also, there was difficulty in finding my way. So I think what ended up happening in part was, I had this idea as to where I was heading and then actually how I felt. And I kind of filled up that space, with compulsive behaviors. By the age of 12, I was finding food as a buffer. And I was diagnosed with anorexia, bulimic type. And then within a short amount of time, I was using substances. And by 19, I was in acute episodes of substance use disorder. I was hepatitis C positive. I was experiencing housing insecurity. I was mentally unwell. I was using against my will. I remember that feeling of I don't want to do this anymore, and I can't stop. And also at the same time, I was taking classes. I was holding a job. I had friends that I went to shows with, concerts and to, all of these very normal rites of passages were happening as well. So I think being here today, part of that is breaking down the bias. Part of being here today is breaking down the bias of a singularity of what a person with substance use disorder looks like. Is when we think we know what that could look like, we really blind ourselves to the full experience and also what recovery can look like. So for me, recovery was not linear, and it involved many different pathways, many different points of access, detox, medically assisted treatment, so many different types of therapies, grateful for the variety that we have, and then also things 12-step peer support groups that were free. I could go there for free because that low economic barrier was really helpful in early recovery. I used intensive outpatient programs. I actually worked with Jackie. Thank you, Jackie.
You're so welcome. It was an honor.
And, slowly but surely that I want recovery became I'm worthy of recovery. That was a big shift for me. So again, recovery can look different for different people. And for me, you know, substance use disorder expressed in a variety of ways, and recovery expressed in a variety of ways, where it wasn't linear. And through it all, I was still Kara. And that's why I'm here today, to open the door a bit further on not just normalizing, but humanizing substance use disorder and recovery.
Thank you, Kara. That was just such a heartfelt message. I hope everyone that is listening really deeply, you know, listens to this and listen to your words over again, which I know I'm going to enjoy doing myself. You know, so much, you know, jumped right into me that you were saying. Two in particular, I don't know if it's a tipping point. You didn't really call it that, or, you know, a flash moment in time. But your words of "I am worthy of recovery" means that you were in a place where you didn't feel maybe before that you were worthy of recovery. And I just hope that everyone understands that how profound those words are, you know, because this is why we have a culture of caring here that cares for one another. This is why this whole discussion is in the context of our approach for diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because if people do not feel that there is inclusion, or there's inequitable kinds of treatments based on what they are dealing with in life, you're going to have people feel it's all about Maya Angelou's. You can people forget what you say, they'll forget what you do, they'll never forget how you made them feel. So what you just expressed is a feeling of worthiness of recovery, and the fact that you had that moment where I am worthy of recovery, that is just profound to me. And I love your thoughts through it all, and thank God this is true. I am still Kara. Those are just, I love it. Fabulous. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
So now, Jacqueline, please tell us, how does Kara's story resonate with what you see and hear in patients you care for?
Wow. Just need a minute with Kara here for a second. I am so grateful for you. I hope that the listeners recognize the strength, the bravery, the resilience that it takes to step into all that you have stepped into. And this disease process, those things that have happened to you in your life are a part of who you are, but they do not define you. You define you. And each and every person that's on this journey, it's about them and who they define themselves as. It's not that stinking thinking that happens in recovery, in addiction. And we have to remember, addictions don't discriminate. They do not discriminate. They don't care if you're the CEO of the hospital or the judge or the sanitation worker or the teacher. It does not matter. It creeps in, and it could be any single one of us. You just don't know until you're there. And any person who dares to walk through a door and says, "I need help," rockstar. And how blessed are those of us that get to do this work, who get to be in the lives of people every day. How blessed are we with that vulnerability that they bring forth and the gift that they give us and allow for we to show up and be present. They didn't ask for Jackie Sear to be sitting in that chair. I signed up for that. And every day I'm grateful for the people who allow me to do that. So thank you. And thank you for every person that's within the Northern Lights system and our communities, because what we do with our families, we do with our friends, we do with our colleagues, the people who are listening, maybe the ones that need help. They may have a loved one who needs help. This is an amazing platform that you have given us, Tim. Thank you for that. Thank you for your support from the top down to do this amazing and important and difficult work that is not easy for people to step into. Some people do this naturally, others have to work at it. And Kara, as being that person with the voice that you're having right now, it's far-reaching. We never know who needs to hear our message. And we never know who's going to show up in front of us. Could be any single one of us. And someone says, hey, I need help. It's our job. It's about being human and being present and saying, okay, I've got you. Might not have all the right answers, but I can get you connected. And sometimes it's not even about the words. It's just being present. So thank you for that.
You know, like the message that I get to share today, it can be far-reaching. I also remember the providers and the healthcare staff that I got to work with. And, like, I don't take that for granted, how people got, like, 3 seconds of my full story, you know, the whole thing. And they might have seen me in a very acute, like, again, very... like low point of that journey, you know, I'm in the valley and I'm tired and I'm sick and I'm ashamed. I'm carrying shame and fear on board. And those providers like still showed compassion. Like that made a difference. Like I can still remember I broke my C2 vertebrae. Actually, I kind of skipped over some stuff in my story, but I had a C2 vertebrae fracture in a car accident. And I remember the nurse who braided my hair because I was in a halo brace. She braided my hair and just the lack of judgment, you know, just the kindness. Like that really energized my shift into recovery, you know. So as much as like, yes, my story may be shared today, I also want to hold space for like that nurse and for all of the providers with Acadia that I worked with, and really all the people along that journey who also held, who also contributed just by showing compassion. Yeah, giving a smile. You know, just like those small actions really make a difference. So just had to respond. So thank you, Jackie.
And you know why they were able to do that? Because they saw you. They didn't see the halo. They didn't see, I'll speak for myself. When any time we step in to an encounter with someone who's accessing care, you have a very short window, seconds, to make a connection and build rapport. It's an exchange between human beings. You have to see that person. You have to. We live in a society where we get stuck on labels, stereotypes, all of those pieces and parts, and we forget to connect as human beings. I am so grateful and proud of those nurses, the staff that connected in that moment. And it happens, like you said, they're small moments, but they're really the big things, right? That saying, it's the little things that count. They add up. They add up.
Yeah, people were seeing me, not the substance use disorder. They saw me, you know, experiencing symptoms of the disorder. They saw me first. Yeah. That's powerful. Thank you.
Wow, that was a fabulous exchange of thoughts and feelings. Kara and Jacqueline, thank you both for sharing that. And before I get into, the next question, I'd like both of you to think about and just, point out just again how amazing both of you are and the dialogue is, and listeners, listen, please, to what was just shared and think about your kinds of conversations that you have with people and opening up. And, again, that's our hope, is that we're creating great safe space, to talk and connect with people. So think about how you can do this in your lives. But I'll just say again, that in the caregiver and the individual seeking care interface relationship connection, what the caregiver just said in our dialogue, obviously that's Jackie, is admiring Cara's strength and bravery and resilience is what she said, And, it was also pointed out that, being human and being present is what all of that is about. And then you heard Cara's, sense of what she remembers vividly is the people that took care of her. So isn't that what we're all in the business of doing? Isn't that what we're all in the mission of doing? Just think it's beautiful. So now I would like to ask both of your perspectives on ways that we are trying to do something about stigma. And I love, Cara, how you introduced the word bias in place of stigma. That's really, really interesting. Again, it got me connecting the idea of that kind of bias or that kind of stigma that leads to bias, leads to non-inclusion, leads to so many, just destructive barriers. So bias, okay, bias is what we're talking about now. What we're trying to do, something about bias. So Cara, you first, please. Are we making progress in easing bias or easing stigma? Have changes in the treatment of people with substance use disorder helped based on what you know and see? But are we making progress?
Yes, we are. And we all, I just have to say, with bias, the fact that we're talking about bias shows progress. We all have it. And I'm so glad that conversation is happening, that, workshops are being offered with Northern Light. I think offered and also part of the curriculum with being an employee of Northern Light is it's not just about raising awareness. We're also changing our actions. So it's just a huge shift right there. To me, obvious, marks of progress are being able to call an ambulance if someone's experiencing an overdose. Holy smokes, there was a time, not too long ago, where if somebody was in a critical health episode, we couldn't call for help without the risk of incarceration. And then what happens with incarceration? People trying to get a job with a criminal history related to their substance use disorder can be very difficult. There's a lot of bias around that. Rather than seeing the progress and the recovery and the strength that it can take to overcome some of those challenges, there is bias that can discount or disqualify someone from a position that they would thrive in and really contribute to a team. Another thing, the multiple points of access to different types of recovery modalities is each person may need a different blend, And so rather than feeling oh my gosh, I don't fit into society, and then all of a sudden, oh my gosh, I don't fit into recovery, that's just further isolating. So being able to have options, and then people who support that individual, who supported me to find the path that was right for me. Just greater access to Narcan, fentanyl testing strips. There's sober living houses, medication-assisted treatment. There's safer use supplies. There's more of a variety of 12-step peer support groups than when I first came into recovery. And there's smart recovery. There's recovery coaches. That's just a short list. So we are making progress. And One of the big shifts for me more recently is the people first language. I love this. I'm about this. You know, using, like, being able to say I'm a person in recovery from substance use disorder feels so much more full, so much more of a, more of the true story than like, I'm an addict. You know, I'm a person in recovery from substance use disorder. I'm a person first. It makes me think of other conditions, like say a person with diabetes. That person may volunteer, or they may enjoy fishing, or they may enjoy hiking. And I think the same is true for a person with substance use disorder. You know, they're a person first. They're, you know, that's a very important shift in my opinion. And ultimately, I'm in favor of using the language that a person self-identifies with. Great question, Tim.
Thank you, Cara. That's terrific. Really appreciate your thoughts. Jackie, how about you? What are your thoughts?
Have we made progress?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've come a long ways. We still got a long ways to go. And I think one of the things that is of the utmost importance, especially with the current state of affairs in our world and healthcare and people working short and the stressors of COVID and all of that, is that we remember to stop and celebrate the wins. We have so much loss happening with everyone being stressed, roles that we take on, the short staff, all of those things. We have to remember that we're all doing our best, right? And we're showing up. And we hope that we always bring our best selves, but we're humans. And if we make a misstep, it's okay. Acknowledge it. If you're not sure of the right terminology to use, ask the question. I learn so much every day by each and every person who walks in front of me, right? I've been corrected, which I love, because it's a learning opportunity, and in learning we grow, right? And sometimes some of the labels or verbiage that people use to identify themselves to society may seem offensive, but if that is how they choose to identify, allow it, because it's theirs. And the reason I'm saying this is because that statement of being a person in recovery, a person who has substance use disorder in place of I'm an addict. That word I'm an addict doesn't always have a derogatory connotation for each and every individual. And Cara, thank you for shaking your head, because I know you get this, and that can be very, it's a sensitive thing for a lot of folks. But it's that patient first language. And one of the strongest messages I got was many years ago when I first started doing this work. And a gentleman came across the way and at a conference and pointed me out. And he said, I don't know why, but I feel I need to tell you my story. I have that way with people. He said, I'm an addict. And I need you to know that, and I'm not sure why, but I also need you to know that sobriety is rented, and the rent is due every day. And I'm so grateful for that man. Never seen him again. Had the conversation. But as our conversation continued, he really educated me on the fact that patient-centered language, to him, he holds that word dear to himself. That's his word. It reminds him of how far he has come. But if you, Tim, were to talk to him, that's not your word to use. That's his word. And so when we as healthcare providers sit with people will use the terms that are most appropriate in the role of which we are in. But my ask is that we be okay with some of the old language if that language is important to the person who is sharing it with you.
Thank you. I'm really enjoying this conversation. So for you both, are there areas you think healthcare could grow to better serve people with substance use disorder? And I'll just put a little color commentary to that question too while you're thinking of your answer. But, you know, I love so much of what you've already shared, but, you know, showing up and doing our best. And mistakes or, you know, are along the way are okay. You know, I always say the only mistake is if you don't learn from mistakes. Otherwise it's not a mistake. And so back to the question then, are there areas you think, since obviously we know that our audience of this podcast is getting wider and wider. And much of it is really geared toward not only general, you know, societal issues and things of that nature and the communities where we serve, but also our own Northern Light family. And so hopefully there are things that we can learn from how you're both going to answer this question. Are there areas you think that healthcare could grow to better serve people with substance use disorder? Jackie, how about you first?
So one of the things that is currently growing and building is that Tim, within your lead for our 23-25 strategic plan, is bringing substance use services and mental health to the forefront. It's right up there in the top four.
And our big audacious goals, if I might jump in on that.
I love it. We're gonna collect those small wins along the way, right? And so with that, we are going to be working, are already working, to stand up a sustainable substance use services delivery model of care that could, and hopefully will allow all member orgs to deliver multiple aspects of care to serve our community, to serve each other with a no wrong door approach. That shift in culture is huge. There's so much value in that. And by moving that way, my counterpart, Jessie Higgins, who is the director of Integrated Behavioral Health, and her amazing team, we have a lot of conversations around this. And the goal is to get trauma-informed education into all practices from frontline staff and every person that encounters any individual who walks into Northern Light. And I think that it is important that we recognize that any family member within the Northern Light system, our work families, have an opportunity to make a difference. It's not always the doc, the nurse practitioner, the nurse, the counselor. Sometimes it's that friendly voice or face at the window when you check in and they've been able to build that rapport. We want to arm people with the knowledge, and with knowledge comes comfort and confidence and competence as to how to help folks access care. It takes a lot to say, I need help. when you build that courage and you step into that strength, we have a responsibility to make sure that our team can receive it. They don't have to have the answer, remember that, but they need to be able to make the connection and highlight that as importance. Yes, we're busy, but we're never too busy. We can't be. It's dangerous. So thank you for allowing that to be right up there as a top priority. The other thing that's super important is all of the conversations that are happening. We have more disciplines within our systems that are stepping to the table and willing to have conversations that are reaching out for support. And so with that, we'll build the education that we're providing. It's about rapport building and relationships, the amount of community outreach, recognizing that Northern Light is very large. But, sorry, Tim, it might not be the right place for everyone, right? Because this is not cookie cutter. It's not a one size fits all. But we still have our role, right? You stepped in and said, hey, I need help. And if Northern Light's not the place, we've got some amazing, amazing community providers. It may be for medication. It may be for counseling. It may be peer support. We have the Barn. We have the Together Place, which are agencies that we are partnering with through some grants and just having open and honest conversations so that the rapport is there and we can refer people appropriately. We have PCHC just across the river, and they have some amazing programs. We're opening up access to medications for OUD within primary care practice, within our EDs. That's Eastern Maine, that's St. Joe's. We're sitting at the tables and we're having mutual conversations and we're partnering. And that's progress. It's not them and us. It's a, we got a job to do here, people. There's lives to be saved and it's coming together. And that's huge. That's growth. The other piece of that is we've already got some really great services in place. Some pretty amazing services. And one thing that I have learned, especially over the last 9 months or so, is that we have gotten better with communicating, effectively communicating. There are a lot of services that happen within Northern Light Health that not everybody is aware of. And it's, oh, you guys do that? Oh, well, and there's complementary things happening. So we're doing a really great job in breaking down silos. So I think it's important to kind of name what we have going on out there and how do we build upon it. So I think we're well on our way for growth. And a shout out on your Narcan statement earlier, Cara. Huge. It's huge, right? It's a life-saving measure, and we are getting more of it out there. Our EDs have increased the amount of Narcan that they're dispensing. Acadia has an amazing Narcan distribution program. We are working with primary care practices and getting that as part of the regular scripting. Just a lot of movement, a lot of movement. But more importantly, the passion and the compassion is growing.
Terrific. Thank you for sharing that, Jackie. And you know, I like one thing that you said about no wrong door approach. That's a new thought in my mind. I'm going to think about that a lot. That's terrific. I'll investigate that a little bit as I talk to folks in my travels, you know. And one thing on partnering, you mentioned that, and I'm so glad you listed so many different examples of partnering. I spent a couple of years in my life in East Africa trying to help with healthcare infrastructure development and that kind of thing. And there was an African proverb that was, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think that really applies in this situation. Now, Cara, I know that Jackie said a few things that prompted some thoughts. So whatever you'd like to say in response to what Jackie said, but also, are there areas you think healthcare could grow to better serve people with substance use disorder.
Oh, thank you so much for mentioning that proverb. It's one of my mottos, my mantras that I hold that dear. So thank you. I'm not surprised that it was mentioned today, actually. So Jackie, you mentioned Narcan and the availability of Narcan. And I have to say, you know, the first batch of Narcan that I got my hands on, I was so excited because I had heard about it and I had seen it, you know, and then I was able to hold it. And the day that I got it, I had been at a recovery summit. And the next night it was used to save someone's life. The next night. And that person has been out there saving other lives, mentoring people in recovery. So I guess the takeaway is just never underestimate the impact you have. Never underestimate the impact you have. And it's great to have the tools available. Tim, you had asked about, you know, areas that we're growing, where we can grow. And I think Jackie mentioned, you know, one of them with the peer support. I love that we have recovery coaches employed by Northern Light, and I want to see that grow. I want to see recovery coaches available like the ER and perhaps for inpatient visits, certainly with, you know, our Northern Light Acadia. Oftentimes, but not always, recovery coaches that go through training, like with the Portland Recovery Community Center or the Bangor Area Recovery Network, the BARN, which was mentioned, they're people with lived experience. And they're bringing such depth of information to, you know, that position. So hire people in recovery. That's a place that we can grow. We can hire people in recovery. And there's an initiative that we can commit to. It's called the Recovery Friendly Workplace. It was originally developed by the Peer Recovery Center for Excellence. In states like New Hampshire, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Colorado, Pennsylvania, they've already adopted this initiative. And I'd love to see this. I'd love to see this in Northern Light. So not only do we want to hire people in recovery, we want to create the framework. Like, we're already talking, we're bringing that culture, that culture of caring, the culture of compassion. We're leading with the heart. We want to build that framework to support people. And for our employees that are already, you know, experiencing substance use disorder and they're exploring options for recovery, we also want to make sure those options are available. And initiatives like Recovery Friendly Workplace do that. We know burnout it's so prevalent. So like the past 2 years, like I joined healthcare in 2020. Like I came into healthcare in 2020. For the people in my life, like my family who's been employed with Northern Light, watching them be so brave the past 2 years and resilient and also tired, so tired, you know, like to think about ways of creating more sustainability in our workplaces to hold like the emotional health, the mental health, and the physical health of not just the patients, but the employees is, I think, the direction we're heading. And initiatives, again, like Recovery Friendly Workplace complement that. So I think it aligns with our values. Also, I think we would benefit from a mentor program that was specific for healthcare workers who are living with substance use disorder. I read about this program that was created by aviation companies with pilots. You know, it was created because pilots weren't able to speak openly about their experiences, you know, whether it was related to substance use disorder or not. So what they did to address this issue is they hired a team of retired pilots through NASA. And that openness of sharing, you know, being able to share information was incredibly valuable, not just for the individual, not just for the pilot, but for the company. So Northern Light could gain so much information by creating a mentor program. Okay, I have to say, I tried to defer the talk today, like my role in this talk today. I reached out to someone who I know is in recovery from substance use disorder, and I asked, would you be willing to share your story? It's a powerful story. Each one is. And they took the time and they talked to their leadership because they had someone that does know their story, that part of their story. And they came back to me and they were like, I have to decline. you know, I'm up for a promotion in 2 years. And at this time, it doesn't make sense to speak openly about my experiences in recovery. So that's a missed opportunity. It's a learning opportunity. There it is. It's a learning opportunity. And I want to thank that person because they helped me be brave today and sit here. So a mentor program, let's do that. So to be able to, destigmatize use and dismantle bias is really, I mean, it's radical. The most, Sherry Mitchell, who is an Indigenous advocate and a lawyer and just a truth teller, once said, the most revolutionary act we can do is to heal ourselves. And I believe that. I believe that if we can go inwards and take that time to heal ourselves, I think that ripples out. And that's been true in my recovery path. So again, never underestimate the impact that you have. We all are healing. So thank you.
That was beautiful, once again, in the sense that we have to remember that different is not wrong. Everybody's journey is different. Choices are different. Different pathways are meant to be. And that relationship with different substances, the breakups occur at different times, sometimes fully, sometimes it turns to social. It's about harm reduction. And what does that look like? And as providers work with individuals, we have to make sure that we're meeting people where they're at and where they hope to go. And that we know what it is that is important to that individual on their recovery journey and their healing process. Medications for opioid use is not for everyone, right? Sometimes it is. And when it is and it works well and they get to that place where the chaos settles some, there's all those feelings and all of that stuff that was suppressed is still there. Well, now we really need to be sure we're ready to help them heal through the rest of it. Because it would be super irresponsible to get someone there and not provide services. And so remembering that it's not about us and the big, beautiful treatment plans that we develop that meet all those regulatory check boxes. If it doesn't meet the individual's need that is in front of you, if they are in a place within their journey where basic needs are not being met, they can't achieve those goals and you're setting people up to fail. So harm reduction, where does it start? What does it look like? That's where we need to be. That's where we need to be. We had so much happen at the start of this pandemic. And I am a nurse through and through, healthcare workers in my family, 3 beautiful children that have stepped into healthcare in various roles. Being a nurse was the best thing I've ever done in my life until I became a mom. And this will shift the emotion because my husband says, well, where am I in that? And I'm like, you're there too, honey, you really are. The experience of new healthcare members coming into our amazing professions has not been the same. They're coming in at a time where we're all trying to figure things out. It's a pandemic. Gosh, we've never been here before. We're having to garb up and wear all this equipment and we have to be present. We have to be present and emotionally solid for those people who have stepped into our care. And then we have to go home and be people too. And I loved where you were going, Carl, when you talked about, I'm going to miss the quote, but basically that emotional wellness. We need to do better We need to do better. We need to take care of emotional wellness up front. We need to role model it, and we need to implement it. We need to create space for it. It's a busy time. There's a lot going on. It's scary. It's overwhelming. But if we don't take care of ourselves and we don't take care of each other, we can't take care of our communities. But my ask is that our leadership team does just that. Role model it, implement it, and expect it. Because, yes, we need to keep the doors open, and the financials are important, and the amount of people that we see, and there's wait lists, and there's all of those things. But when our folks are getting crispy, and they can't take care of themselves, and they're faking it till they make it, the universe is going to jump up and it's going to undo things. So if we vest in our own and we're having communications about, hey, Tim, what did you do this weekend to take care of yourself? Wow, Cara, this was a crazy week at work this week. What are you going to do this weekend? Paying attention that substances are so much of our culture. And the issues arise when there becomes maladaptive coping strategies, right? That are overused and step over that line. And one of the things that people joke about, do, it's advertised everywhere, is gonna go home and drink some wine, or got a business meeting, you're gonna go have drinks with someone. Over shopping, overspending, all of the things that fall within the ability to develop an addiction. Mind, body, spirit brings you pleasure, right? Can be the addiction. We have to be checking in with each other to make sure that we have healthy outlets. And we, as a workforce, need to take care of each other. And especially taking care of our young. Because who's going to be there to take care of us? Getting older is a gift. And so grateful for the opportunities to build this healthcare workforce and have those conversations with folks about checking your own biases. Because when you know what they are, you can battle them when they present. Because we're humans working with humans, and people are going to push your buttons, and we all have them. But if we're not doing that wellness, and we're not doing that self-check on biases, we're going to fail in one way or another. And so thank you for bringing that up. And Tim, thank you for this opportunity. And I'm looking forward to how we celebrate that emotional wellness and take care of our team members, knowing that they are then going home and taking care of family members and community members, their church families, all of those things. And anything we offer, they may utilize for themselves, or they may utilize it for someone within their circle. And it can be life-saving, and it's huge.
Thank you, Jackie Sear. Thank you, Carl Alexic. Just a couple of wrap-up thoughts that I had, and see if there's anything else you'd like to share as well. You know, the most radical thing we can do is heal ourselves. I think that is really powerful. So, listeners, I hope that's one of the things that you reflect on. A shout out of honor and love to all persons in recovery. And shouldn't that be what a big part of our lives is all about? To help, to lend support, and also to not have bias on whatever people are going through in life. remember to celebrate the successes, and there's no such thing as a small success. In fact, the ones that are the quietest and the subtlest are the most profound and the most beautiful and the ones we can learn from the most. We all are indeed trying to figure things out in this era of whatever pandemic, endemic, post-pandemic. It's not post-pandemic, whatever you want to call it. It's been crazy going on 3 years that has left a lot of us very brittle, especially in healthcare. And a lot of the dialogue in healthcare is now switching back to, it costs too much, I can't get in, I can't do this, I can't do that. So the old things that we dealt with pre-COVID, that we were, quote, up against, now we're up against it again. Memories are short, and so now we're expected to be the ideal caregivers, again, as we're human. So we do need to take care of our emotional wellness, absolutely, absolutely. And I'm so thankful for the thoughts, the vision, and the examples of ways in which we can do that better. So I thank both of you for taking the time to do that. And my last thought is that, you know, one of the sort of transformational, I don't know, philosophies for me, I guess, over the course of my life and my professional career and that kind of a thing, and it's relatively recent, and that is humility is a great strength. So I say that all the time. I live it. I believe it. And then, though, when I participate in this kind of a setting and listen to just two great individuals share their experience, and I realize that, sure, I listened humbly, but it wasn't my humility that was strong. It was you and what you were sharing that was strong. And so where I can take that humility as a strength to a next level is just to try to grasp a deeper understanding by listening to what people experience and don't have preconceived ideas, notions, checklists, processes, whatever you want to call it. Like, forget it. It is about the people. And thank goodness that's what that's our common good, is our corporate good of Northern Light Health. And so how are we helping with the common good is what we should be asking all the time. And yes, that means the Northern Light family, which is our staff and their families. That's a large number of people. And each one is unique and different and special. So I thank you for everything that you brought to the discussion. Cara, anything you'd like to add?
You mentioned the Northern Light family, and I think of recovery being very much about connection. So it's great to be connected with this family of Northern Light.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you for that. Thank you for being here today. And you, Jackie?
Remember, none of us do this alone. Hope.
Terrific.
Resilience. Lean into the uncomfortable. That's where the growth happens. Keep talking. Naturalize these conversations. Keep opening up these platforms. And thank you for your strength.
Great. Thank you, Jackie. So it is my privilege to have you both on our show. Thank you, our podcast listeners, as well. And I ask you, go back and listen to this a second time, because it is fabulous. Until next time, I'm Tim Dentry, encouraging you to listen and act to promote our Northern Light culture of caring, diversity, and inclusion that starts with caring for one another. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Tim Talk. If you enjoyed this podcast, please join us next month for a new episode. And please know that there are several ways you can tune into Tim Talk. You can find new episodes on our website at northernlighthealth.org/podcast. We are also on Google, Apple, and Podbean, which makes it easier for you to listen on the go on your favorite app.